Hi, I'm Jess Fishlock and you're listening to the NWSL special of the Women's Football Podcast. Enjoy!
Welcome along to another special of the Women's Football Podcast. With the NWSL season at an end, we felt it was about time to have our look at the season out in America. I'm joined by Kieran, as always.
Hello.
That was enthusiastic.
I thought it sounded good. I'm saying hello. What do you want me to say? Howdy.
Yeah, in an American style. Howdy. Thankfully, we're also joined by our resident NWSL expert, Emily Dalhanty, all the way from Canada. All right, Em.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
You flatter me. Call me an expert.
You're better than this guy.
I knew that was coming.
So anyway, what have we got on the show today? Well, we are going to have a little look at every single team's campaign in the NWSL. We'll start at the bottom and we'll launch straight into it because we've got a couple of interviews lined up for later, but we'll keep them as a little surprise. So, guys, Washington Spirit. What do we make of them? Let's go to you, M.
Yeah, they had not a good season, obviously. Anyone that followed the league could see that. Finished bottom of the table, 14 points, worst goal differential. They had a rough go. And Dinah Matheson was one of their leaders. You know, she really scored the bulk of their goals, and if she wasn't scoring, then she was creating for them. So she was a huge part of their attack and their defense as well. Yeah, they need improvements everywhere. Maybe not everywhere, but almost everywhere. And when we're heading into next season,
what do you think was fundamentally their problem? Was it going forward? Was it at the back?
I think it was going forward. They just couldn't generate anything at times. And then that just, they were just in their own end, and it just furthered some of their defensive woes that they had, just because they spent so much time in their own end. They had a couple defensive injuries throughout the year as well. I think one game they had, like, almost an entirely makeshift back line. So, yeah, but definitely their attacking is where they'll need to improve, for sure, generating attack, or they might find themselves at the bottom again.
Of course, they get the first draft pick, having finished bottom, but second bottom, and we'll go to you, Kieran, because I know you're watching this team quite closely this season. And Seattle Reign, if they started pulling out some of the form that they picked up with at the end of the season, then actually they could have been in the playoff picture.
Yeah, I think they had a lot of problems, didn't they? And I think a lot of people have said that the results didn't necessarily represent the performances. They obviously had Megan Rapinoe missing until June. They had Hope Solo missing through injury. I don't really think there's an awful lot more that I can add. But Laura Harvey did say in the last podcast, mate, you know, she was there, she'd seen it all being the head coach, and they know the things that they've got to do. Obviously, they've been dealt a blow already with the news that Rapinoe won't join them until June because she's going to be playing in the Champions League with Lyon. But they've got talent there. Christine Nairn was very, very impressive as a rookie. I thought she was a very, very strong player for them, and was certainly a contender for Rookie of the Year. And, you know, a few additions here and there might see them improve, and I think they'll be in for a good season next year, hopefully.
Obviously, it's interesting for them because Laura Harvey brings that European style.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think having someone like Jess Fishlock in the middle of the park, obviously Jess was nominated and picked for the All-Star 11 that was named at the end of the year, that was selected by American journalists. She settled in very well, brought that European element of the game into the team. Obviously, she's played for Bristol. She's played for AZ Alkmaar out in Holland as well. So, you know, there were questions, really, from... I'll be honest, I wasn't sure if Jess would be able to cope out there, because it is such a physical league. But, you know, she proved everyone and more that she could manage herself out there and was one of the, you know, one of the bigger players in the league overall.
Yeah, smashed it. Doing well's proud. Right, Chicago Red Stars. Who wants to jump in on that?
I'll leave that one with Emily, I think.
All right. Yeah, Chicago had sort of an up and down season. I think they got unlucky with their American allocations. Obviously, Shannon Box had that knee injury that kept her out of the whole season. At first, I think they were saying it wasn't going to be a season ender, and then kind of more towards the end of the season, I think she had been seen kind of at games doing warm-ups and stuff, but she never saw the field at the end of the season at all. So that was a big downside for them, because she's an absolute force there in the midfield. Amy LaPelvet as well had her ACL surgery and rehab, so she didn't get to play their season at all. Then they traded Keelan over to Seattle. So yeah, they didn't get a lot of attacking players in their allocation, so that's really where they struggled a lot. They did have the Germans Sonja Fuchs and Inka Grings come in, but they're both not returning next year.
That didn't work out, the two Germans, really, did it?
No, yeah. I mean, they helped, but I don't think it was the impact that maybe Chicago suspected and hoped for. So they're not returning next year. So yeah, I mean, a couple of improvements here and there will definitely, you know, bring them into playoff contention next year. They weren't far off. They really started, you know, turning it up at the end of the season, shocking some teams, some late game comebacks, late game wins. So it wasn't all bad for them. So we'll see how the U.S. allocation works, if, you know, if they can get some, you know, get their three U.S. allocations. Really, they didn't have that all year, and get some attacking power.
So obviously you've mentioned that Chicago had quite a few negative factors, but do they have anything positive going for them?
They do. The trade that sent Keelan Winters from Chicago to Seattle, even before the season started, means that Chicago is going to get an allocated team player back from Seattle, and they're also going to get Seattle's college draft pick. So Chicago will have an extra first-round draft pick. So they do. They have an opportunity to add more quality to their team right from the get-go. So, yeah, Chicago, I think, just by their form, the end of last season, they're definitely a team that could push for one of those four playoff spots.
Brilliant. Boston Breakers finished in fifth, but we are not going to speak about the Breakers, because we've got Leanne Sanderson, their MVP, which we're very proud of her for achieving, and Joanna Lohmann talking about their season a little bit later in the show. So we'll go straight to number four, Sky Blue. Kieran?
Yeah, they were strong all throughout the season. Fell away a little bit towards the end, because they were sort of top two for quite some time. Lisa Devanna, the Australian striker, was a constant menace throughout the whole season. Really, really strong player for them. Christy Lampone was very, very strong, obviously, American captain. And yeah, they impressed throughout. And I think, as I say, they fell away towards the end a little bit, and that hence the reason that they finished fourth and not first. But if you look at the top four sides, there was very little to separate them. So, you know, they'll be strong again next season, I'm sure. Lisa Devanna put something up on her personal website this week or last week, sort of like a thank you message to the Sky Blue fans. And I don't know about what you made of it, Em, but it sort of insinuated that she may not be back next season. I'm not sure what you thought about that.
Yeah, it's pretty vague. Kind of not really saying yes, not really saying no. Kind of thanking Sky Blue for the opportunity and the season that she had. But kind of, she says to my teammates, "I miss you. I hope to cross paths once again one day real soon. It's been a wonderful experience in New Jersey. Thanks so much, and on to the next journey." So, I mean, she could be saying kind of goodbye for the off season or altogether. Who knows? But I definitely think if she's not back with Sky Blue, they need to find a good proven forward, because even with her, they did struggle to put the ball in the back of the net a lot, and with her gone, they're going to need to find a good replacement.
So, moving on, Portland in third, and they were very much in the shake-up.
Yeah, I think a lot of people's tip at the beginning of the season, people saw the allocations that they got. Alex Morgan, Christine Sinclair, Rachel Bueller, David Heath obviously joined them in June after her stint with Paris Saint-Germain finished. And you know, they didn't disappoint. They were very, very good throughout. They had a couple of dips, but you know, generally they were a very exciting team to watch. Absolutely no question whatsoever that they had the best support in the whole of the league, certainly in terms of numbers. I think they had anything from 12,000 to 17,000 in their home games, and a fantastic atmosphere generated at their home ground. And you know, they went on to win the whole thing. So you know, their pre-season favourite tags that was attached by quite a few people certainly came to fruition, because they, you know, they turned up in the final and turned on the style.
Emily, is there anyone out in the States and Canada saying that it takes something a little bit away from it, that they finished the season in third but then went on to win the whole thing?
No. I mean, even I was thinking, I don't really like the whole idea of going a 22-game season and having the playoffs be two games, because there's a lot of room for error. It kind of makes the 22-game, once you've qualified, really meaningless. Meaningless once you have that playoff spot. But this season, since three teams did finish with those 38 points and there were tiebreakers involved, I think it was close enough that the playoffs kind of showed who was the better team on the day, on both days. But as Kieran mentioned, they had all the expectation. They started up high, and then they had really bad games where they had basically no midfield at all. They were, just the midfield was not firing at all, not being a link. And then Tobin Heath came in, things got better at some points, not better at some points, not worse, but not much improvement. But they were able to
get the job done
in the end. So, yeah.
Kansas City were another one of those teams that were very, very close.
They should have won it.
Yeah.
They should have won it. They were the best team throughout the whole season. I know they finished runner-up to New York, but I think Laura Harvey said it in the podcast last month that they were the most impressive team. They were solid at the back, five of Nicole Barnhart and Lauren Sesselman and Becky Galbran and Leanne Robinson and Christy Newis. They were solid, and they were very, very good throughout the whole season. And then obviously you had Erica Timrak, who was voted the Rookie of the Year, Lauren Holiday, who was voted the MVP and also Golden Boot winner. They should have won it, mate. They should have won it. I hate to say it, but they blew it in their semi-final in the first playoff game.
Yeah.
They were 2-0 up, and they let Portland back in.
What happened in that semi-final? Was it a case of freezing on the big stage, or?
I think, I don't know, really. They had a couple defensive breakdowns, really, and then they were kind of shocked that Portland ended up tying it, and then maybe it just became a case of who wants it more. It was a really hot day. I remember watching it at home here in the nice air conditioning, and people were saying it was like 100+ there on the field. It just looked terrible from the live stream, just looked so hot, so who knows, it could have just been game day management of the Heat. Portland was able to manage it better. They were just able to find those goals.
Right. And obviously, the team that finished top of the pile was Western New York Flash. But we're not going to talk about that. We're going to let Carly Lloyd instead, who's obviously been on the podcast before. But she was that good that we brought her back for this one.
So we have the pleasure of Carly Lloyd joining us for a second time on the Women's Football Podcast. Carly, thank you for joining us on the show. Let's get the difficult question out of the way first. The defeat to Portland last week, give us your views and how you felt having had such a great regular season with your team.
Perfect. Well, it's good to be on again. Appreciate it. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't end the way that we all thought it was going to end. It was very disappointing. You know, I really thought that everything that we had kind of went through all season long, you know, some struggle, some obstacles, me coming back from, you know, my broken shoulder, winning the inaugural season, just thought that was our chance, you know, and obviously there was a lot riding on it. It would have been the fourth time the Western New York Flash won a championship in four different leagues. So there was a lot of pressure, a lot riding on it. But, you know, sometimes the game of soccer is just cruel, and sometimes you can play well and play consistent and, you know, play great as a team all season long, and for a long stretch. And it just so happened that night, we were a bit flat. You know, there was, you know, some things not kind of working. Obviously, I had a couple chances myself that I didn't put away. Portland had a couple of chances. I mean, the game could have kind of went either way. Obviously, Tobin Heath's strike.
Nothing you can do about that, is there?
No, nothing you do. And, you know, I think for them to score first kind of gave them more of the momentum.
Now, from a spectator's perspective, a lot of people will think when Portland went down to 10 players with Cat Williamson being sent off, that would give New York an upper hand. But players quite often say that playing against 10 can be even more difficult than playing against 11. Do you think that's what you found when she was sent off?
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, you know, I remember looking at Abby and we were both looking at each other saying, all right, you know, they're down a player, here's our chance. And you would think that we would find something to get us going. You know, something would click, something would work, and it just wasn't. And the longer the time went on, I just was saying to myself, you know, if we can't figure this out, you know, right when they went down a player, you know, I don't know if this is going to happen. It was just tough. It's just one of those days. And, you know, whether some people ran out of gas or steam at the end, you know, it was definitely a long season. We had majority of our players kind of playing over and over, you know, and the depth of these rosters aren't huge. You know, you figure you're playing on a regular basis 13, 14 players on a 22 game streak, more than that. So I think that, you know, maybe that's what that was the case, but it's okay. You know, it's at least we made it to the finals.
How difficult is that? Because obviously here in England, for a team to travel to an away game, for example, you can do it in a few hours, is probably the furthest you're going to have to travel. Over there in the States, when you're going from New York over to Portland or to Seattle, I mean, there's a 5-6 hour plane journey involved for something like that. How draining is it to not only have to play such intense and fast games, but to have to deal with all the traveling as well?
It's definitely tough. You know, you're not sleeping in your own bed. You have a roommate. I mean, maybe you don't have a roommate when you're home in your own comfort or your room. You know, so you're dealing with a team schedule. You've got team meals. You've got you know, certain food to eat. So it's tough. I mean, anybody knows it. It's tough on the road. Like when we travel abroad and go to Olympics or World Cup, you know, it's tough. You're over there for a month. Yep. You know, they're trying to cater to our types of food, but it's different.
Well, disappointment at the end, but a very good season overall. And also a very good season overall for you personally. 10 goals in 16 games. You mentioned earlier coming back off of a serious shoulder injury. You must be delighted with the way things went for you on a personal level.
Yeah, I think definitely happy with how things went. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that you know, kind of didn't think that I could play well or do well. And, you know, I just kind of laugh because they're not realizing that all the years prior to this, I was a box-to-box midfielder. You know, I shared both the responsibility of defending and attacking. This year, I had the freedom with two defensive mids who were putting in so much work behind me, and I had the freedom to do what I do best, and that's being the final third and attack and shoot and set people up and link off of Abby. So, it was a lot of fun because I think that I spent majority of my career, kind of more on the defensive side and doing all that dirty work that a lot of people don't really notice. And then now it's flipped and I'm on the attacking side of things.
Now, you mentioned being a box-to-box midfielder and having to, you know, do defensive duties in the past. You're still not afraid of a tackle, though, are you? 4 yellow cards, Carly. Explain yourself for that, please.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the jersey mentality or what, but I've kind of all throughout my career, I've
feisty.
Always been that gritty, feisty player. I remember even college getting too many yellow cards one time, and I had to actually sit out a game. I like to tackle, some people, prefer to score goals or, play a great final ball, but tackling and being gritty is up there with me. I enjoy it, and I know that I can and have to have the physical presence, because obviously if I'm taking the ball off some players in that attacking third, you're closer to goal and you can, help string teammates in on a shot on goal or whatever. But I was a little scared at one point when I received my 4th yellow. I knew I had to be careful. But, hey, it's part of the game, and I think that next year I'm going to do a bit a better job of kind of keeping my mouth shut to the referees and just letting them ref the game.
Well, I'll tell you what, watching the final against Portland, I know the outcome wasn't your didn't go your way, but it was a hell of a game to watch, and certainly for the first half it was, you used the word feisty, it was definitely feisty. There were some serious tackles going in. But let's learn a little bit about your teammates. I've just read your blog and you've mentioned in it that there were some funny stories and funny things that happened over the course of the season. Is there anything that particularly stands out as being quite amusing that you can relay to us?
Well, we would always laugh with Jody Ann Robison. We call her Jar. She's Canadian. And for the whole season, she didn't have a cell phone. She just is like, I'm not paying for a cell phone. It's going to be expensive. But she had her iPod. So whenever we were in a Wi-Fi spot, she'd connect her iPod, and we all would group text. And, we'd always laugh around with her. Hey, Jar, what's going on? We have Wi-Fi. You can respond to us now. But it's really, really funny. I mean, she would sit there with her iPod. She would take videos of herself and pictures. She's probably going to kill me for saying this if she hears it. But she's not on social media, so she probably won't hear about this.
It sounds like she's stuck in the 1990s. And when she found a Wi-Fi spot, it was like, oh, wow, it's 2013. I've got 10 minutes to learn what it's like.
Yeah, but we had a lot of laughs. Whatever it was, I can't pinpoint one particular thing, but we were always laughing about stuff. We had a lot of fun together.
Who's the joker in the squad? Who's the one that likes to mess around and play jokes on everyone else?
Well, we had some of the older girls in the last week go over and scare the, it was Amy Barzik, Vicky DiMartino, and Samantha Kerr. They were staying at a house near the facility, and some of the girls went over and scared them and moved the pillows, put some knives on the ground. They got really, really, really scared. The next day, they almost called the police. They weren't too happy about it, but I thought it was pretty funny.
Did you have any involvement in that, Carly?
I did not, actually, No. But I like to joke around. I'd say Samantha Kerr likes to joke. We've got some jokesters on the team.
Okay. Final one. A lot of your American colleagues and internationals are coming over to Europe because they want to experience playing in the Champions League. Would you ever consider coming over to Europe and playing in the Champions League?
I think it's definitely probably a great experience. Right now, the best thing for me is to be home here. Obviously, I train in New Jersey with my trainer, James Galanis, at Universal Soccer Academy. So for right now, that's the best place. But it could be something down the road, maybe towards the latter part of my career when I'm going to retire. Maybe that's something that I do that I would like to experience. But for right now, I'm going to going to stay here and continue to help market and improve the NWSL.
Fantastic. Well, Carly, for the second time, an absolute pleasure, really insightful, and we wish you the very best between now and the next NWSL season. I'm sure we're going to see you turning out for the US Women's National Team during that time, but thank you once again for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Get involved via Facebook.
Facebook.com/WFpod.
So that was Carly Lloyd talking about Western New York Flash's season. But, you know, we've got to have a little look at all the major talking points in the NWSL this season, because there have been quite a few. And we've actually delayed this podcast slightly because we wanted to have a little look at what trades were going to happen and see if there was any very quick post-season ones. And we weren't really let down, to be honest, because Kaelin Kyle has obviously left Seattle, hasn't she, Kieran?
Yeah, she has. She's gone to the Boston Breakers, and Carmelina Moscato, I believe, has gone in the opposite direction, although Em would know more about her because obviously they're both Canadian, so it might be one to throw over to her.
Yeah, that was definitely a surprise. Definitely I was surprised by that one. They announced they had major news, and then it was kind of trickled out that it was a trade. So yeah, I kind of like this trade, just speaking from more of the Canadian national team standpoint. It puts Kaelin back in her natural position, which is in the midfield, because obviously Laura Harvey kind of just all of a sudden transitioned her back to Seattle's backline when they were having some problems at the beginning of last season. And a couple not so great games, but that ended up working out well. But I'm not so sure that John Herdman would have kind of continued that transition. So, yeah, the owner, Boston's owner, Lee Billiard, he confirmed that she would be playing in the midfield for Boston, back in her natural position. And as for Seattle, Carmen Moscato, she obviously has already been traded once from Chicago, so this will be her third NWSL team, but hopefully she'll get some more minutes there. She's a very super, super experienced center back, and I think she can bring a lot to Seattle's back line. And Harvey actually gave a quote here from Goal, WA, a blog based in Seattle, and she said of the trade, "We felt this swap would allow Kaelin to return to her natural position on the pitch and will give Carm the chance to make an impact on the field each week." So there you go.
Well, we also have had the waivers draft as well. And for those who don't know about the waivers draft, Emily, run through the process very quickly for us.
It's basically made up of players who have been put on waivers by the team. Their options on their contract not picked up for the next season. So I believe there were 10 on that list, but two of them included the Germans from Chicago, Sonja Fuss and Ike Grings, who already mentioned they wouldn't be playing in the NWSL next year. But yeah, we had something kind of funny happen. Nikki Marshall was let go, and yeah, an article up on Soccer Wire today by Caitlin Murray, she's great at getting all the scoops, it actually mentioned that they told Nikki, she knew that she was being waived 3 weeks before the NWSL final.
Ouch.
So that's kind of interesting timing there.
Motivation, that's what you need. Don't win us the NWSL title, but you're leaving afterwards.
I don't know how that would have worked for me. I might have been a little bit mad, but I guess it worked for them. So anyway, she was picked up on Monday in the draft by Washington, but then it also came out in that article today that she is not sure if she even will be playing in the league next year. She's kind of yet to make a decision, it says, and she's contemplating retirement, and they've kind of been having some discussions with her to see if they can come to an agreement. But definitely be a strong new signing for Washington. But I guess we're just going to have to wait and see if it comes to fruition.
Absolutely. Kieran, another talking point has been the Mexican players in the league not been getting too many minutes, have they?
No, they haven't. And I think that was shown when the US Women's National Team played Mexico last week and absolutely hammered them 7-0. It's difficult, isn't it? You know, the clubs have got a responsibility to their owners and their supporters to play their best 11 players week in, week out. And if the Mexican players aren't those best 11, then there's no responsibility for the clubs to pick them. So obviously it's to the detriment of the Mexican national team, though, because they looked well out of their depth when they played the Americans last week. Granted, it won't be the first and won't be the last team that is absolutely hammered by the Americans, but they didn't look at the races, and you can't really blame them when hardly any of those players have kicked a ball for their NWSL clubs. The goalkeeper, who I must confess his name has escaped me, is the backup for the Boston Breakers. I'm not even sure if she played. She may have played one game all season. And, you know, how is she supposed to compete and perform when she's got Abby Wambeck and Carly Lloyd and all these high-flying American players all coming towards her? You know, they were 5-0 down at half-time. You can't blame them because they barely played. So the Mexican Federation now has a decision to make. Do they want those players taking part in the NWSL next year, or do they want them playing elsewhere where they're actually going to get on the pitch?
Yeah, big decisions. But I'm glad you've mentioned the US national team, because Laurie Kolutny, she's another major talking point as well, because she cannot get into that team.
No, she can't. And it's not because she's not playing well, because she was voted the third best player in the NWSL. Obviously, Lauren Holliday was named MVP, Abby Wambeck was runner-up, and Laurie was third place. And the reason that she can't get picked is because she's not been cleared to play for the US Women's National Team by the team's doctor. Laurie had concussion issues between 2006 and 2008, and she has not played for the US since 2009 because the doctor is not willing to pass her to take part in the team. She's got 92 caps. She's scored 8 goals. She's only 29 years old, so she's still got plenty of life left in her. But she can't play. But she's been cleared by 2 other specialists. She's been cleared by the clubs that she's played for during that period. So it's a strange one. And I think Em can give a bit more about that, because I don't even think the specialist has met her before, has he?
No. I mean, I was just going to say, the weirdest and absolutely the worst part in this story is that it was mentioned that she hadn't been seen in person by the U.S. soccer doctor. So, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm not sure how you can accurately kind of diagnose someone and kind of see where things have moved along without seeing the person in person. So, yeah, it's a sad situation. I mean, she definitely deserves to be in the American squad. She's a great player, but I just can't see anything changing anytime soon.
Bizarre decision. Bizarre decision, certainly. And hopefully one that resolves itself before too long. But we can't have a podcast of this nature without talking about the Canadian players, considering we've got a Canadian with us. Emily, are you happy with the Canadian players' impact on the NWSL this season?
Yeah, for the most part, I guess all the bulk of players who you kind of thought were going to be big players were. They had good impacts wherever they were. I'm super, super interested to know when the allocation list will come out, if the numbers will change at all, kind of gets dropped and gets picked up. I know that John Herdman had been on Seattle's halftime kind of broadcast a couple times this season for interviews, and he'd been mentioned, you know, maybe Canada has too many allocations. Some players weren't getting time, and I know a couple of the players had already been playing overseas in previous years in Sweden and Norway. So it'll be interesting to see if he kind of thinks there's a better place for some players over there. One person who comes to mind, I don't know if you'd agree with this, Kieran, is Emily Zur on Seattle. She started a couple of games at the beginning, but she fell out of favor quickly. And once she was out of favor in that 11, she really didn't see it. She didn't really see it again. I think she started one other game at the very end of the season when kind of everything was...
Yeah, It's interesting with Emily. We spoke to Laura off of the recording last week and the last podcast. She likes Emily. She really, really likes her. She says she's a good kid. She really wants to work hard with her. So I'm not really sure what will happen with her, but certainly there is no ill feeling between Emily and Laura Harvey. I can certainly say that, because Laura spoke very highly of her, and I think if there was a player that she'd really like to get ready and back in the team next season, then it would certainly be her, because she had nothing but good things to say.
Emily, I was going to ask you, who for you has been the Canadian that stood out this season?
I mean, obviously the answer is going to be Sinclair anywhere she goes, but more importantly, I think I'm a big Desiree Scott fan.
I think she absolutely was one of Kansas City's pieces of their puzzle that, I mean, if she wasn't there, they would have had some problems. She's great at that defensive mid spot. And somebody who was traded, actually, Adriana Leon from Boston to Chicago, didn't get much time in Boston, but was able to kind of make that starting 11 right away in Chicago and keep it. She didn't score many goals there, but she definitely helped set up a bunch, and just her technicality is great. She's still super young, but she's, I think, one to look forward to representing Canada for a while.
Let's move on quickly. Let's touch on the future. We know that there aren't going to be any teams added to the league. Is that a good thing? Because similar to the WSL in England, obviously the league is trying to make itself strong. But it has to do that making baby steps.
Well, also, in the WSL is expanding, isn't it, in 2014. But that will be the fourth edition. That will be the fourth year that the WSL has been running. I think it's a smart move not to expand it at this stage, to be honest with you, because we've seen in the past how American soccer has tried to run before it can walk. We've seen two previous leagues collapse before they've even got off the ground because they've invested money in the wrong areas. They've brought in high-profile internationals on big salaries, and it hasn't worked out. And if they start to expand and bring other teams in, and if those teams can't attract the spectators, or they can't, you know, keep up with the other teams who've already got a year under their belt, it makes it incredibly difficult. So I don't know what Em thinks about it, but I certainly think it was the wisest move not to expand. Certainly something for the future, but I think for now they stick with the eight teams.
Well, Emily, I'm just going to quickly cut you off there, actually, because I want to specifically ask you, would you like to see some Canadian clubs, you know, maybe attached to the men's sides, perhaps, come into the league?
Definitely. I mean, I don't know if it'll happen kind of before the World Cup here, but I don't think there's a better time to do it than kind of in these next few years. I mean, we have the Under-20 World Cup next year, and obviously the World Cup here, 2015. And yeah, I love how there's the Canadian allocations in the league, but I think moving forward, we need more. We need a Canadian team here to be able to have kind of more Canadians on it, really. And I just think it's just, there's a great market here in Toronto, for example. Even I know Vancouver have kind of shut down the idea of having an expansion team at the moment, and some things in the past weren't great with the Whitecaps women's team, but who knows, in the future I think that would be great. But I do agree, next year keeping eight teams is the right move. All eight teams are returning, which is a huge plus that hasn't always happened in the history of the leagues here in the States. So just having all teams return is great, and definitely looking to build on that in the future. I think LA should have a team. They have a huge market down there as well. I can see the league expanding there soon. But yeah, I guess that's another one. We'll wait and see.
Brilliant. Well, let's hope that the World Cup perhaps changes a few people's minds. One player who we hope will be heading to that World Cup is Leanne Sanderson, the Boston Breakers MVP. And Kieran, you managed to have a coffee with her, I think, and Joanna Lohman. So let's hear that
alcoholic
interview.
Alcoholic beverage, I'll have you know.
An alcoholic beverage. I sent you to work. I sent you to work, not play.
Okay, so I have the pleasure of a double interview for the first time on the Women's Football Podcast. I have the Boston Breakers pair, Leanne Sanderson and Joanna Lohman. Guys, first off, we're looking back at the NWSL for this podcast. Tell us your overall thoughts and your overall views on how your individual seasons were, and we'll start with Leanne.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me on a personal level, I think I've had my best soccer slash football I've ever played in my life. I didn't think I'd ever be able to top the way I felt when I played for Arsenal, when we won the quadruple and stuff like that. But I think since I went to America, I've definitely improved as a player on and off the field. And I think Paul Riley helped me a lot when I first went over there. I almost felt like a workman with all the tools and just ready to kind of go out there to work. And that's how it kind of felt. But yeah, I think I've got better as a player having gone there. And I think it was the best decision I ever made to go and play in America. And obviously I got MVP of our team, which was a massive honour because it was voted for by my fellow teammates, staff and stuff like that. So because I think sometimes when you fans, like, it's great that you get voted for things by fans, but I think the biggest like compliment is to be voted for by your fellow teammates, because they're the ones that really, really matter, and that meant a lot to me.
Okay, Joanna, how about yourself, and did Leanne deserve that MVP, or do you think you were in for a shout for that?
No, I think undecidedly Leanne was the MVP of our team. I know she got my vote, and obviously the votes of the majority of my teammates, and I think it was very well deserved. Like Leanne, I was pleased with my season. As a defensive mid, I think I do a lot of the thankless jobs, but I think that's just a representation of who I am as a person. I don't mind working hard and getting my hands dirty and really doing the small things that make a big impact for the team. So I played a lot of minutes, which I was extremely happy with. And as a veteran, I just, you know, I love the game so much that I just want to play, and I'll play any position. I'll do anything that the team asks of me, and I was just, you know, very, very pleased again that I was able to make such an impact on the team.
I hate the fact you call yourself a veteran, because you're just a year older than myself, and I like to still think that I've got some youthfulness about me. But I'll come back to Leanne in a second, but I will follow up on one of your answer there. You mentioned being a veteran, you mentioned the fact that you're a defensive mid, and you've got the sort of the job of maybe mopping up and doing a bit more of the dirty work. You played every single game for Boston this season. What's the secret to stay fit during such a competitive and such an intense campaign?
I really try to take care of myself and make the right decisions, and it's not necessarily the big decisions. It's really small things, like after every single practice, Leanne and I take ice baths. I tend to, after training, just put my legs up and try to rest, because it's a very long and rigorous season, and it can be quite grueling on the body. So it's really important that you take care of yourself and you stay healthy, you eat well, you get enough sleep. And these all sound like extremely boring things, but they're the things that will keep you healthy and elongate your career.
Leanne, you mentioned your MVP. You, like Joanna, played every single game for Boston this season. Tell us exactly what it meant to you, but also what it means to you going forward with this Boston Breakers team.
Yeah, I mean, obviously to get the award was a massive thing for me, like I said before, but I think for my own personal thoughts are that I've worked extremely hard in the off-season. I listen, I want to be the best I can be, and I think Joe, definitely not from a biased perspective, but going on from what she just said, like, Joe's the most disciplined person I know, on and off the field. She does all the right things, and I think she's a great role model for the younger players in our team, because a lot of the girls say sometimes would think, well, they feel tired or something like that, and they don't realise it's the smaller things that make the biggest difference. And I think Joe taught me that from when I first came to America, like when I was playing with players like Carolyn Sager, Joe and a few others. They definitely helped me be a lot more disciplined on and off the field, and realise that it's important to get the right amount of sleep, and it's important to rest your legs ready for the game, because the reason why you're there is to play professional football. And I think sometimes that gets forgotten about why you're actually in a city, because we're in Boston. We love Boston as a city, but we're there to play football, and we're there to do the best we can for Boston as a city. And that's what we try and do. And I think I'm really proud of the way Joe and I have done this season, because I think we've worked hard in the off-season, and whatever team we play for, we always give 110%, and that's to the fans as well. And wherever we are, we always try and be social people, and on and off the field. I think Boston, for me, like, really appreciate what I bring to the team. They appreciate what Joe brings to the team on and off the field, and I think it makes me want to play for that team, because I feel fully appreciated. And on the field, I think, like, Lisa was our coach obviously for most part of the season, and people always ask me why I feel like I had such a great year, and I said because I was just left alone. And people say, what do you mean? I said because I don't need to be told how great I am, I don't need to be told how bad I am, just need to let me be, because I'm my biggest critic.
Okay. Joanna, what have you made of the actual competition this time round? Lots of American internationals, lots of former American internationals like yourself. Not so many international players this time round. What have you made of the league as a whole?
I think the league this time around, the NWSL, is not as high of a level as the WPS, but I think that's to be expected. The budgets are lower. I think the priority number one is to create a sustainable league, and priority number two is to create a sustainable league. So, you know, you're trying to get the best players under a certain budget. So we may not be able to get the Martyrs and the Caroline Sagers and the top players from their respective countries, but you still have so many good players in the world and also in the United States, and players like Leanne Sanderson and Lisa Devanna that have come over from overseas and internationally and have made a very enormous impact on the league. And I think that from this year, it's only going to get better. As the budgets get a bit bigger and as we create a sustainable model and we see that the fan base is there and the ticket sales are there, I think we'll be drawing in a lot of some bigger names that want to come over to the United States and play, because they realize it's the best league in the world, regardless of not having the top internationals, because every single game is extremely competitive. You never know who's going to win when you step on the field, and although we only have 8 teams, every team is of extremely high quality, so it makes for a really fun and exciting season.
Jan, let's talk about Boston. You admitted before we came onto air there was some inconsistency throughout the season. What do you put that down to?
It's a good question. I think it's just, again, like you said, about playing every single day and having the professional mentality. And I would say that the college system, a lot of the players that we have coming out of the college system, they're the best player on their team. So it's difficult for them to adapt to the professional level, where you have to really bring your A game every single day. In college, you're playing for a fall season, and then you have the winter off, and then essentially in spring, it's off and on. So again, professional means you bring your game every single day, and I think that was probably one of our issues, is that we just didn't necessarily have the consistency in training, and the training goes on to the match field. So if you can't bring it in training, it's not going to come. It's not going to just appear naturally in a game.
Okay. Leanne Jonovs obviously answered the question about inconsistency and what she feels was needed. You obviously playing in America is a big deal to you. What is it that keeps you motivated to play out there, and what do you hope to achieve in the coming seasons in the NWSL?
I think for me, like, as soon as I left America, England in 2010 to go to America, I fell in love with the country as soon as I stepped off the plane. It was just amazing, like the facilities, the players, the mentality and everything like that. And I think it says how much I really want to play in America when, like, when the league folded and it was gone. I'd received a few offers, a number of offers from like a lot of different teams all over the world, which is a great compliment, but I was holding out the fact that the league was going to come back, and I didn't even know if the league was coming back at that point. So I feel like for me, I'm at my happiest when I'm in America. I love playing football. I love getting paid to do something that I love every day, and I'll never ever complain, ever. I'm never going to retire, and I'll never complain.
Well, you told me off of the recording, and I think I'm okay to say this because by the time we come out, you will have announced it publicly, you're both going to be playing Champions League football. Do you want to give us a bit of information about that, Joanna?
Yeah, we'll be playing for a team in Limassol, Apollon, Limassol, and it's in the southern part of Cyprus, and we just found out the draw today, so we'll be playing against an Austrian team. And the name slips my memory because it's very hard to pronounce. But this will be my first opportunity getting to play in the Champions League. And it's always been a dream of mine. So I can honestly say that I'm going to be living out one of my dreams. I know Leanne's played in it. She's actually won it. So there's that much else you can do from there. But you know what? It's fantastic. We get to travel. We get to do what we love. And again, like, zero complaints on that. And I'm just really thrilled to be able to be a part of the Champions League and try to help a team and make impact again.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
So that was Boston Breakers MVP Leanne Sanderson and Joanna Lohman speaking to you, Kieran. And it sounded like you enjoyed yourself there.
They were great. Yeah, they were really, really good. Nice contrast in accents as much as anything. So yeah, really pleased to have them on the show.
Excellent. Right, so that brings us to the end of this special. Obviously, you know, we've discussed what we thought were the major talking points in the NWSL, but I'm sure you've all got your own talking points that you'd like to share with us, and please do. You can talk to us via Twitter at WFPod, via email at thewfpod@gmail.com, or get us on our Facebook page, which I always forget, so Kieran, help me out.
Facebook.com/WFPod.
Winner. So all that's left is for us to say thank you very much, Emily. Always nice to hear from you.
Thanks, you guys.
And Kieran, you can sign off.
See you later.
Cheerio, everyone. Until next time.
The Women's Football Podcast. Shining a light on the women's game.